we hear a lot about how one person can really mess things up, but we rarely hear about how one or a few can make a difference. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's good to be back with you. Great to on this Labor Day weekend, since this is our show for September 1st, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to be back with you and be chatting with you, even though I, as of the airing of this program, am actually about 2,000 miles away.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing how that works. Yeah. You record it on Tuesday, and voila, you can play it on Saturday. Yeah.
And we miss everything that happens from Wednesday to Friday, but that's all right.
Well, we miss, that's true. That's why we really like recording later in the week, because especially in the over the last year and a half or so, things happen real fast.
It is seeming to be the case that every time you turn around, something else is coming up.
Is popping, yeah. And there's lots of interesting things going on, but I don't, many things, and some stuff you and I have decided consciously not to talk about.
Yes, there's that as well. There's so much going on, though, that there's plenty to talk about.
Oh, yes.
So, if you take a look around, I mean, what is the one of the key headlines that hit this week? And you know, there's some good reason for it. But again, Chuck, as you and I were looking this over, there seems to be an awful lot under the surface that may or may not be getting touched on, depending upon the reporter's political leanings. Surprise, surprise. And what I'm talking about is the situation that happened in Jacksonville, Florida. I think that was on Sunday, where a 24-year-old young man, who we now have started to unravel and learn, appeared very troubled to start with.
Let's say mentally ill, because he was.
Yeah, he was diagnosed, and we'll talk more about the reason why that's important in the story. That he was at a tournament, a video game tournament. This was one, I guess they hold these all the time. I've never been involved in one, and for good reason, not because of the outcome of this one, but because I just honestly I don't like playing video games. I never have.
Oh, there's a couple I like.
Well, that's good. That's good. And I'm sure, and I, you know, and of course, I'm an old fuddy-duddy to the kids, but I used to try to play them, and it would just frustrate me. For some reason, my brain doesn't work the same way in a 2D environment, so I just have problems. So I don't like them. But anyhow, so this. It's Madden 19 is what they were playing, which is the where you. Make up a team, or you play a team of that's based on professional football, the NFL. And this young man, I guess, from what I gather, was a Buffalo Bills fan, etc. Had won a couple of regionals and championships playing, you know, in the previous iterations, because Madden, there's a new one that comes out every year. Of course, with all the most recent players and the trades and the acquisitions and who went to which teams and the different uniform, you know, mock-ups that they have. And so this young man, David Katz, I believe is his name, really had been, this was his world. He was immersed in this. Honestly, you know, he very much, I think, sought an outlet through becoming good at playing this video game, this particular one, this Madden series. And by all accounts, he was pretty good at it. He went last year, a couple years ago, he won regional championships. And I guess, Chuck, I'm gonna walk back one of my statements, because I guess I have played something similar to this. I used to, when I was out in college and before I got married, my roommate and I would go to a local pizza place, watering hole, etc., and watch Monday Night Football on big screens. And they had a little system called QB1.
Oh, gosh.
And it was basically where you had to kind of pick the plays before they ran them live on television.
I remember,
and how,
yes.
And you gained points based on how close to the actual play running you called, up to what they actually played on the screen.
Go back further. In Columbus, there was a system called Cube.
That's right. That's Cube. And I think QB1 came out of that.
And Cube, actually, there was a game, a high school game, where people were allowed to pick the plays that the team won. And the team played. And I can remember that this headline or the newspaper story said the operation was a success, but the patient died 14-7. In other words, the team where the plays were called by Cube, by the consensus opinion on Cube, got beat. Yes. So that's my remembrance of a similar online game, online after a fashion.
I guess I have been in this similar type of world for a little while because, hey, I have to admit, my roommate and I, we played this game, and we'd go every Monday night and watch Monday Night Football and eat wings or whatever and play this game. And, Chuck, I guess I can feel in one sense, and maybe I wasn't as imbalanced as it seems that Mr. Katz was, but my roommate and I ended up becoming not only the location champion, but the regional champion of playing this game. We were pretty good at it. We both kind of had an intrinsic feel for what was going on, and we could pick some like really complex play calling, and we'd usually hit, you know? And so, yeah, I get it. You know, you can, when you win anything,
it feels good.
It feels good. There's a sense of accomplishment. There's a sense of, when you are missing fundamental things in your life, like Christ and assurance of your salvation and forgiveness of your sins and other things of that nature that Christians you experience. You need something to fill that up with for the value, the self-worth, the being able to look yourself in the eye kind of thing. And for a lot of people, they fill it with this, with competition. They fill it with being the best at something, even if it is just punching buttons on a randomized computer program. And that's where David Katz was. And so when he came into this competition, he was ranked 7th. And this competition wasn't local. This was in Jacksonville, Florida, at a little, you know, shopping center area called Jacksonville Landings. It's one of those open air things where, you know, they're right along a causeway or something, and you've got all the stores strung together. And so this was at a pizza place, and they were having this tournament. And I guess it was like maybe a national regional tournament, because Katz comes from Maryland. So he drove to Florida from Maryland. Of course, some of the other folks, there was a contestant from West Virginia. They were from all over the place, okay? There were a lot of people there, and they were all competitive. There was money to be had as well for winning these kind of games, and, of course, recognition, et cetera. And Katz, one of the news stations had an interview, a video interview, EA Sports, who produces the Madden games. This was their big thing, and so they were interviewing the contestants, and they were basically, because he'd played a semi-round, and he was ranked 7th in the pool, and he beat the number 2 guy, and he beat him pretty convincingly. And so he basically said, I don't see myself as, I see myself as a winner. And that little clip right there is being pushed around now, because what we didn't realize, or what they didn't realize at the time, was David Katz didn't just see himself as a winner. He saw himself as having to win.
Yes.
He saw that his entire identity, purpose, and reason for existence was wrapped into him winning this game. And so, Chuck, on Sunday, when he lost his, I don't know if it was a quarterfinal or semifinal round of this game, and it was clear that he was not going to win, be in the winner's circle for the overall championship, David Katz left the facility, and he came back a little bit later, and he shot 11 people, killing two of them and then turned the gun on himself and took his own life. Now, of course, the left screaming about gun control. Well, wouldn't a man, he could have come back in with a knife. He could have come back in with a baseball bat or a club. You know, he could have come back in with a bucket of water and, you know, thrown it on the electronics that they were holding in their hands and, you know, tried to electrocute them. It just so happened that he picked up a firearm and he opened fire. And, you know, sadly enough, because this was being live streamed on video, because, you know, everything we do now, Chuck, has to be on video 24/7.
Of course, yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
And so they were live streaming this, so the live stream picked up a player sitting there playing the game, and all of a sudden a red dot appears on his chest. Well, that's the aiming reticle laser point light of the firearm that Katz was holding. And the next thing you know is you hear shots ring out, and then the video goes to black. Because EA quickly enough realized, we don't want to be filming this. Click, let's turn it off. Knowing that there was a situation going on. Well, by the time it got done, and of course, it sounds to me like law enforcement was moving fairly rapidly once the shots went off. And there were probably security there and things of that nature. But again, Chuck, you know, it's one of those situations where you're dealing with an individual who, as we found out later, has been treated for mental illness. Now, we only found that out when he acted out, because he was treated for mental illness issues as a minor. And so, therefore, his records were sealed. And, well, Chuck, you know, of course, the gun control lobby screaming about, you know, the easy access to firearms. And supposedly you have an article or a few articles that basically said that Katz obtained the firearm that he used legally.
Oh, it's all in Maryland. He bought it from a
licensed gun dealer in Maryland. If the gun dealer, when doing the background check on the person, and of course, Maryland being one of the more stringent gun control states in the union, you know, with the waiting period and everything else, what's a dealer to do when the national check comes back and says clear? You have to take it at face value, and you have an individual there who's of age, whose background check comes up clear, and has the money and wants to purchase a particular, you know, item.
There's another facet of this.
Okay, go for it.
And the fact is that when you fill out the yellow sheet, if you've ever bought a gun, you got to fill out a yellow sheet. When you fill out the yellow sheet, one of the questions on there is, have you ever been treated for or spent for mental illness or spent time in a facility? Now,
well, obviously, Mr. Katz didn't want to reveal that information, so he left it blank.
Essentially, you have to sign it. Now, and that is, in essence, a sworn statement.
Right. It's you can perjure yourself by falsifying that statement.
That's right. And so when we see headlines blazoned all over every place, Maryland's one of the hardest places in the country to buy a gun.
Bar none.
But it's also one of the most liberal states in the union, especially regarding childhood criminal and mental health records. In other words, when I say liberal, it means that your record is buried deep. Buried deep. It basically is very difficult to get out. So what do we know? We know that someone lied on a yellow sheet to get a gun. What does that mean? Does that mean they legally purchased the gun? No, it means just the opposite. They didn't legally purchase the gun. They illegally purchased the gun.
So, similar to somebody entering this country without going through the proper procedures.
What do you know? There's laws. There are laws for a reason.
Was he a guest permit holder? Was
that on the well, gun? Let's not laugh about that, because the fact
is that he
got a gun and he got it illegally. He did not legally purchase a gun. He illegally purchased a gun, flat out.
Indeed, he did.
I'm not seeing that thing being emphasized. All I'm seeing is he spent time in a mental institution and he got a gun. Well, put two and two together, folks. You have to do a connect. Because you can't buy a gun if you've been in a mental institution. Unless you lie unless you lie on the form.
You're supposed to be under disability for that. And, well, okay, yeah, you're right. You have to lie on the form in order to be able to clear the disability.
And so, on the instant background check, stuff like that should show. Why didn't it show? Because his juvenile record is buried deep. That's why. That's the bottom line. It's been buried so deep that even the federal government couldn't get at it. And they can get at almost anything.
Well, and I think that probably, you know, as the days go by, they'll sort this out a little bit more.
Well, we won't hear about it.
Well, we probably won't hear it. But then again, you know, it very well could have been that it was a paperwork snafu or a data entry glitch that caused that paperwork to just, you know, miraculously not show up on the background check. So, but anyhow, either way, the sad part about it is two individuals, other than the shooter, other than Katz, lost their lives by being basically in the wrong place.
Yeah.
At the, as we would consider the wrong time, but as Katz would consider the exactly right time. I haven't heard much on either one, except, you know, with being here local, found out that one of the two that were killed was one of the individuals who came from West Virginia to attend and participate in the tournament. So that's the only thing I know about, you know, we know more about the shooter than we know about his victims. Chuck, that's where I see there's a great imbalance, because I think that we tend to, and I get it. I get, you know, it makes for copying, you know, and it drives headlines and it, you know, gets eyes on things and clicks and drives ad revenues to obsess on the perpetrator. But I'm not seeing much of anything. There's like a little blurb on one site, a little bit about one of the individuals who basically protected people, other people, when the shots started ringing out. And that's great. But why do we not know the names of the individuals who lost their lives that day? Why do we not know a little bit about their backgrounds, that family? From what I know, the gentleman from West Virginia had a wife and two little kids.
There is a story out there that gives it all, but it's not being emphasized.
But it's not being emphasized, right. And you know, and I've not seen much on it. Like I said, the only way I saw anything about who the victims were and anything about them was because one of them was fairly local here. Okay, maybe that's okay. Maybe that's to help, you know, because the families are grieving and they don't want to see, you know, the notices that their family member has lost their lives in what would be considered one of the most ridiculous things that you could possibly end up losing your life over, and that's a video game.
Absolutely.
You know, honestly, if we want to talk about, you know, the left can talk about the gun all they want to. I want to talk about the state of our society where people feel that and address so much importance and, you know, priority to things that really are incredibly don't really matter. I mean, yes, I know to some people it matters deeply who wins their video game. Folks, there's perspective check there that needs to happen, because those video games are not life. They're not bringing you any closer to, you know, success in your life. They're not bringing you any closer to a stronger walk with the Lord. They're not bringing you any closer to showing the tools that you need in order to be a well-balanced and happy person. Obviously not. Look at David Katz.
Yeah.
This guy was completely unhappy and completely immersed in this world of he's got to be the best. Now, again, Chuck, got to be careful because I can hear leftists already saying, well, that's the reason why we have to take competition out of everything and we just reward participation trophies. Healthy competition is a good thing. Healthy competition, but the key is on the word healthy.
The fact is it teaches most people how to lose gracefully.
Well, exactly.
Because let's face it. I mean, sometimes as I've gotten older, I've mellowed on this. When I was younger, I didn't like to play board games, even though I was good at them. I didn't like to play them because when I lost, I didn't like the feelings that I had. I didn't like my internal reaction to that. I thought it was, and how do you get the kind of conscience to develop the idea that you don't like your personality when you lose? There, that's kind of a Christian worldview thing. It's a matter of you recognize that the feelings you have are not good. What do you do to do about that? Well, you either remove yourself from the situation if you can't get it under control, or you learn to that, in fact, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. That when you get in competition, at some point, the chances are somebody's going to beat you at something. Does that necessarily mean that they're absolutely 100% the best person in the world? Well, maybe. It depends on what level you reach. That's why at the Olympics you see people who just completely break down at track events where they've lost a 100-meter dash or something, because they realize that they've been beaten. They thought, you know, you have to build up your own mind that you're the best. Otherwise, you will lose. And they've suddenly realized they're not the best. And it is an emotional letdown to find out that you aren't the best, that somebody else is the best.
True.
It's very difficult. And, that, you know, it's a very emotionally engaging to watch these people, and you know the depth of their feeling because they've trained for this their whole life. They thought they were going to be the best, and they weren't.
Right. Well, and again, I understand some of that in that respect, but, you know, also times we can cast expectations and false hopes on certain things. Now, again, I'm glad you said what you said, because it got me thinking. You know, I've taught my children, for the most part, how to play chess. It's a great game. It's a great stimulating intellectual game. It helps you think. It helps you process. It helps you plan strategy. It helps you be logical. And sometimes I did my job too well, because thank God my children are much more intuitive than I've ever been in my life. And so after I taught them the basics of chess, and of course the only way you can teach somebody the basics of chess the first few times, Chuck, is to play them and beat them.
Yes.
And honestly, you know, as they were first starting out, I mean, I would beat, and I would come and I would bring the game and I'd try to explain, you know, you first of all, you explain how the thing pieces move and who takes what and why you can't do certain things and why certain pieces can't move certain places, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And once you get through all the basics, then you just start playing the game and you start pushing them a little bit. And, you know, my kids at first, they were frustrated by it. They wanted to win, you know, they had a healthy, you know, desire to want to be successful.
It's inbuilt.
It's inbuilt, yeah. And it was good. And sometimes they'd get frustrated and they'd cry or they'd get mad and they'd walk away. And I'd always come back around to them and say, is that really how you want to be known? You know, is that really how you want to be identified as a sore loser or as someone who, if I can't win, I won't play? Or, you know, I said, you got to come down there and understand that losing builds character. And boy, I'll tell you, Chuck, I've had an awful lot of opportunity to build character, because up until just last week, after my kids got their confidence level up on their chess game, I couldn't beat them. Both my boys take me to cleaners all the time. Now, if I didn't have a healthy understanding of the level of relative importance of the game itself versus the lessons that are being taught and versus all the things that, you know, you're trying to help your kids learn, you can get very frustrated by that. But you try not to do that. And last week, my younger son decides he was looking for something to do. And he's like, Dad, would you mind playing a game of chess? And I'm like, okay, sure, come on in. You know, I was in here in the office doing stuff, so we cleared out some space. And he brought we've got one of those roll-up mat chess boards. Yeah. And he brought the pieces in, set them all up. And Oh, and by the way, his favorite chess set is a Lord of the Rings chess set.
Why am I not shocked?
Yeah, the bishops are trolls, and you've got like it's a nice little setup. So we played, and I, for the first time in forever, beat him because I did a completely different strategy than I'd ever done before on him. Usually, I'm kind of let's think through it, let's play. I start in the middle and I work my pieces out. This time, no, I just took one corner and just did a sweeping motion on him. I don't think I move my king until like the next to the last move. Just flanking. I just did a flanking motion.
Yeah.
And it worked. You know, it got him having to move some stuff around, and he ended up putting his king over in a corner, and then I slid a rook back in the back. File. And then slid the queen out about, four columns or four files away from him, but got it right on the line angle. And I just looked at him and said, checkmate. And he looked down the board and he looks around. He sits there and processes for a minute. He goes, huh. Okay. I guess you got me.
Guess what?
And that I'm calling to my older son, come in here. Look, I beat him.
That probably won't work more than a couple of times.
It won't. Once he gets past the shock and awe of, changing something around like that, it'll be back to me like learning character lessons.
That's why in international chess competition, that's why I'm always, it's got to be frustrating because these guys are playing at such a level as they've pretty much seen it all. They're just sitting around waiting for a mistake.
Right. That's the whole thing is my opponent going to make the wrong move? Because if they don't, you're probably going to go to a stalemate.
Yep.
Because these are folks who are. But again, there's got to be some winners and losers. And we don't take out our frustration at not being a winner by physically harming other people.
You didn't pull a pistol out and shoot your son because he beat in earlier games, and he didn't do, and vice versa. He did not pull out a knife or a pistol and stab you or shoot you.
Yeah, and basically say, "This is it, you blankety blank, and I'm gonna take you out.
I'm sick of you." Hey,
that's not how you if you're healthy and well balanced. That's just not. You don't even think that way. It's just like, oh, okay. It's just like he said. He looked at it for a little bit. He kind of studied the board. And he said, good game. It's like, yep, guess you got me there. I didn't see it. And then he went back and said, and I think I know where the move that I shouldn't have made. And I said, yeah, that's exactly the move. You moved the wrong pawn. He moved one pawn on one side of the board, and he should have moved the pawn that was exactly the mirror opposite on the other side of the board. And I said, if you'd have moved the other pawn, I would have never got there. But as soon as you moved that pawn, you opened the door, and three moves later, I got you checkmated. So, and so again, he takes this learning opportunity, and my boys do that. Now, my daughter doesn't play chess quite as much, but she's starting to get there. But again, this is where I don't know what happened with David Katz. I'm guessing if I had to profile, he may be an only child. Or the eldest. He was given lots of alone time. There's probably not a great deal of interaction between him and his parents to start with as a child. So he immersed himself in a world of video games. There may be issues with his, it may be a divorce situation.
Oh, Barry. Let me give you I'm reading, I have a story in front of me from the Baltimore Sun.
Okay.
The young man's mental health and treatment were among the issues at the center of a contentious decade-long divorce case between his parents.
Oh, bingo! Okay, all right. And I haven't seen that, so I didn't know that.
That's a nice catch.
I'm just profiling this kid. Okay, bam, there it is.
Hundreds of pages of court records reveal his troubling behavior and his parents' search for a treatment in the years preceding Sunday's deadly attack.
Bang, there it is. An ugly, long, drawn-out, contentious divorce proceeding. The boy didn't have security. He wasn't sure who was his friend. He was missing love, and he was missing that security of having your parents there guiding you. And he was probably being used as a pawn.
Almost, undoubtedly.
This is making so much more sense now.
a raft of psychologists and counselors offered various opinions on his behavior over the years. In court records, one therapist described 12-year-old David Katz. 12-year-old.
So this 12 is years ago. So, yeah. So, basically, he's 24 now, or was 24 when he took his life on Sunday.
As suffering a psychiatric crisis at 12. The therapist concluded in 2006 that the boy's depression interfered with his ability to eat, sleep, and rise from bed.
Okay.
He attended Glen Elg Country School from grade 6 through 8. He was hospitalized at Shepherd Pratt Health Systems in Towson for psychiatric treatment in 2007. He would have been 13, his parents said in court records. In other words, as exactly what we speculated, he was in a mental facility as a youth, and it didn't show up on his record when he went on his, when he filled out the yellow sheet. So what did he do? He lied on the yellow sheet. Because you have to say whether you've been in or not. Doesn't say if you're a juvenile, don't fill it out. It says, have you ever been?
Yeah.
During his teenage years, the boy was in the custody of his mother. Court records show that they had a fraught relationship. Yeah, because she wouldn't let him play video games all the time and made him take a bath, which is another thing that the story mentions, that he would go to school without bathing and wouldn't eat for days and wouldn't bathe for days. She called the police on him in February 2009. His father said in court records, the court record includes a transcript of the 911 call, 911. He's sitting here wrestling me with the cable cord to the TV. I've had enough with this child. He has been abusive for over 2 years, his mother told the dispatcher. 4 months later, the son called police on his mother, according to a transcript of the call. Well, I was trying to watch TV, and she came in and tried to cut the cord because she thought I wasn't being fair to my brother or something. So he has siblings.
He told
the dispatcher. Then I just, like, stood in her way. Then she came in with scissors, and I took the scissors. Then she came with a knife. She was going to cut the cord to the television. Why? Because the kid was obviously exhibiting dangerously addicted behavior to video. I mean,
yeah.
The story goes on to say that he smashed a hole in his mother's bedroom door to get the controller back to a video game.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like healthy and balanced. No.
No, he's not now. He's unfortunately chosen to take his own life. But he was never balanced, and he hasn't been since. You know, there are people who have mental balance issues, but they can get over it in later life.
Yeah. And I know exactly what you're talking about, because, you know, when we talk about this whole issue, and I'm not segueing fully here, I just like quick note and back. Young people who deal with gender identity issues.
Yes.
If you don't treat them with hormones and, you know, press them toward, you know, making a transition, by the time most 80%+ of them reach the age of 30, they've settled back into their biological gender identity, and they're perfectly happy.
Listen, there was just a case where it's been all over the social media stuff, where this poor child, 9 years old, comes out and announces to his class that he's gay. And supposedly got bullied to the point where he committed suicide. Okay, first of all, a 9-year-old child doesn't know that he's homosexual.
Well, he does if he's getting filled with that kind of stuff through everything he's reading and through what his, you know, whether parents or guardians or whomever's pumping to it.
If you read the stories, you find out the mother is just a piece of work. Do these things influence the mental state of children? Yes. Do I think this young man may have at some point been able to pull out of this? Yes, with the proper guidance. The problem is that the parents weren't together, couldn't provide the proper guidance, and as you said, probably used him as a pawn at some point. It's just a tragic and an ugly situation that, you know, I understand that people live together and they, you know, they can't stand one another. And sometimes that's just as bad for the kids as not being together. Because all they do is fight and fight and fight. They're so self-centered that they can't get away. They can't bury it.
Yeah.
For the sake of the family. Well, look, I've known people who don't get along, and I've known people who got along. You know, and I'm very sympathetic. But I also know what it does to kids to have parents who are constantly at each other's throats, either divorced or not divorced. And it's horribly psychologically damaging.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and again, and I think that, you know, as we're talking here, we have to understand that there was more than just two victims and, you know, 11 people injured. There were three victims, because, well, even though he is and will and, you know, permanently is held responsible for his actions, David Katz obviously was also a part of a product of, the inputs that he was given or was pushed upon him, through the parental issues, through the, you know, lack of oversight and guidance, through the being allowed to. My guess is they overemphasized they were too child-centered early on in parenting and let the child basically get away with and do what he wanted to. And then when things started, you know, breaking down in the security side because the parents started getting into a nasty divorce, you know, he retreats into a world of, you know, the video games, etc. And because that he's probably angry with them for violating his trust. You talk to kids who are a product of divorce, when it gets right down to it, it's a trust issue. You know, the people that they should be able to trust most in the world that was watching out for them and, you know, was working together with each other to, you know, make things, you know, good in their for their family, all of a sudden turn against each other and put the children in the middle, that's an awful heavy load for a child to bear, especially of a young child.
While we're talking,
Katz is as much a victim, but you know, again, he didn't ask for what was happening to him, and neither did the two who were at the game, competing and who were killed by him, ask for what happened to them. But, you know, again, this just points out that when you start putting things in to replace the lack of having a working relationship with God, being, you know, under the authority and sovereignty of God, and having that comfort and security that comes with knowing that the God of the universe loves and cares for you, and, you know, has provided for things for you, as Romans 8:28 says, all things work together for good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. All things, even the stuff that's hard, that's trying, that, you know, roughs us up a little bit when, you know, we have to deal with those issues. We've got to, you know, got to look at where was God pushed to the side in this situation with David Katz. You know, where was God relegated to not even a supporting role, but to we don't want to talk about it role.
Yeah. Yep. I want to go back real quick.
Sure, please.
And I'm going to segue back. I pulled up a yellow sheet. It's called a form 4473. It's the form you have to fill out, to purchase a gun. And this is an important consideration. Question 11F on the forum. By the way, this forum is gigantic. It's been a while since I bought a gun, so I'd forgotten about filling it out. But here's question 11F. Have you ever been adjudicated as a mental defective, or have you ever been committed to a mental institution? Yes, no. See instructions for question 11F. Okay. 11F. Here are the instructions. A determination by a court board a commission or other lawful authority that a person, as a result of marked subnormal intelligence or mental illness, incompetency, condition, or disease, is a danger to himself or to others, or lacks the mental capacity to contract or manage his own affairs. The term shall include a finding of insanity by a court in a criminal case, and those persons found incompetent to stand trial or found not guilty by reason of lack of mental responsibility. A formal commitment of a person to a mental institution by a court, board, commission, or other lawful authority. The term includes a commitment to a mental institution involuntarily. The term includes commitment for mental defectiveness or mental illness. It also includes commitments for other reasons, such as drug use. The term does not include a person in a mental institution for observation or voluntary admission to a mental institution. That's pretty clear to my mind. He lied when he filled out the form.
That's what it sounds like.
No doubt about that.
I was going to say, that one's hard to dance around. You know, that's the fact that that form, and again, you know, it's not so much the item that he used, it's the fact of the reason why he was using an item.
Yes.
It was because he had an imbalance in his life. He had an imbalance of understanding the difference between reality and fantasy, I guess, Chuck. I mean, because if your fantasy online game-playing world is more important to you than the flesh-and-blood world of people around you, then that's imbalance.
Listen, here I'm gonna, just to follow up on at the end of this story. A decade before the shooting Sunday, a psychologist was asked in court if he believed David Katz could turn violent. Quote, "There is the potential that David could lash out and become so angry that he would hit and hurt his mother," Dr. Paul Berman told the court. "But could Katz harm anyone else?" an attorney asked. And quote, I think mom would be the target if David did lash out," he said. That just shows the imprecision of the science, quote-unquote science of psychology.
Right. Well, and you'd have to stop and ask yourself and say, okay, yes, you can be very angry at one person, but if you can't control, you know, your anger, you can't control it. And it, you know, and if it seeks an outlet, or you are letting, you know, an outlet be obtained for the anger feelings that you have, you're not going to be that discriminant, okay?
Yeah.
You're not going to be that discriminant.
Well, look, since we're...
And obviously Katz wasn't that discriminant. He didn't shoot his mother. You know, he shot people because they were keeping him from his perceived goal, which was being the champion, winning the Madden game, being the best at the Madden game. That was his focus. And that was his focus because that's all he knew would get him the attention or the adoration or the love or the security or the hope that he was missing in his life. Now, this is a tragedy. It's a tragedy of epic scale, Chuck, when you really think about it. But it isn't a tragedy of the lack of our laws to keep guns out of the hands of people. It's a lack of our basic human interconnectedness and our trying to set up things outside of what God has provided for us. I mean, the reason why they went through a 10-year contentious divorce was probably because of selfishness, Chuck.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, that really, when it gets right down to it, you know, and people can, I can hear we can screaming now. Basically, people are self-centered and selfish without God. You know, we are full of self. We're not full of the love for others. We're full of seeking our own water level, if you want to put it that way. And oftentimes, those things don't work together in relationships. If both people are only looking out for what they can get out of it, pretty soon they're going to be getting out of it between them. We have an imbalance because we start looking for these things to fulfill us rather than the person who made us fulfillingness. But again, you know, I'm getting pretty heavy on this, and
yeah,
it's a sad thing, and we really need to take it, but we can't just like run knee jerk at no. to oh the you know oh this guy was bad you know oh it's horrible this is bad and you know this is there's an awful lot underneath here that's happening that are failures in our society of acknowledging God.
Multiple failures of
multiple failures of acknowledging God. And understanding that God is in control of things, and you know, that's in order to have more balance in your life, you have to have more life to balance. And that is where you fill in that God fills the holes in that is missing because of our sin and a rebellion to Him. You know, He offers forgiveness, absolution, grace, and mercy, and forgiveness for our sins. And that's really what's needed. Now, you know, Chuck, we talked about, or the opening was, you know, because we've just seen what one or a few, and of course we understand the missteps or some of the missteps and the bad decision making that happened that led up to a lot of people who didn't even know this person,
right,
losing their lives. But let's turn here a little bit and talk about a couple of things that are going right because a person or a small handful of people decided to actually take a look and get involved. Now, we've got one here locally, Chuck, and I think this is fairly important. Some of our listeners may already know about this because they may be on the email loops. You probably wouldn't know a whole lot about it unless you were, because this is happening up in the Cleveland area. And of course, you know, Cleveland has been how do I say it, Chuck? Not the center of the conservative universe.
No, okay? Let's put it that way.
Even though the Republican National Convention was in Cleveland, blah, blah, blah. It's not the center of conservatism in the state or anywhere else, for that matter. Well, it seems to be, it was getting worse, and it probably is. But basically, what happened was that some folks walked into the Bedford branch of the Cleveland Public Library System, the Cuyahoga County Public Library. Okay? Just like any of us would walk into our local branch of our library system, we go in and we expect to find books and magazines and album records and CDs and things and computers and research and, you know, to look things up to help broaden our horizons, to help us to become more knowledgeable and maybe, you know, improve ourselves in some way. And so I'm sure that most of the folks who walk into a library, you know, understand that, you know, libraries are, you know, places where they like to have art displays and things of that nature, because that's culture. You know, they're helping to improve the community culture. Well, when folks walked into the Bedford branch of the Cuyahoga County Public Library here recently, what they were confronted with fairly quickly after you walk in is a display case. And it's a big one. So it's a big display case. It's probably, oh, I don't know, 10 feet long, yeah, three or 4 feet tall and deep. You know, it's one of those glass-fronted display cases. And what they saw, and there's a picture online, and we can link that over to our website at principledpolicy.com, was this announcement and material surrounding it with the banner inside saying Cleveland Pagan Pride, September 24th through September 26th. Okay, no, excuse me, that's August 24th through August 26th, so this month. And there are some, you know, looks like T-shirts with some printing, maybe tarot cards or something on it. There's a broom. A broom. Yeah, they're like little fetish doll-looking things. There's you know, some books up in the on the top. There's like a little glass shelf, and there's some books up there. Maybe things that you can check out at the Bedford branch of the Cuyahoga County Public Library. But it was a display case to celebrate and announce the Cleveland Pagan Pride Festival. Yeah, you didn't hear me wrong.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Pagan Pride Festival event. Now, Diane Stover, who's a friend of ours, who heads up Ohio Value Voters up in that area, she's up in Parma, decided that, you know, what are we doing here? You know, this, are you kidding me? So she walked in and, or she called she saw the thing, she got a photo of it, and then she spoke to the administrator of the library. Now, Chuck, did Diane come in screaming about how horrible that was and how offensive it was and how it had to go right now and how she was triggered and she was looking for a safe space in the library and couldn't find one because this was confronting her? No, that's not what she did. Although, maybe if she had, that would be some of the tactics that the left uses, and it might have worked. I doubt it, though, because it's not a leftist thing to have equal time for anybody. So she spoke rather humbly to the administrator of the library and asked, can the display case that's there, that display case, be used to display, Christmas celebration information or something for a pro-life event that we're doing? Because, you know, every year in the Cleveland area, we have the Bringing America Back to Life convention, right? That's the national pro-life conference that's held in Cleveland, and it's a big event. It's on its like 8th or 9th year, and it's 3 days, and it draws thousands and thousands of people. So, you know, it helps bring, you know, revenue to Cuyahoga County, to the Cleveland area. You know, it's about it's topical issue of current events, et cetera. All of those things. What do you think, Chuck, that the administrator of the Bedford branch of the Cuyahoga County Public Library said to Mrs. Stover when asked if they could use the display case or someone could use the display case to do something about a Christmas celebration or a pro-life event?
Well, it had to be no for reasons of separation of church and state.
Well, yeah, and they really kind of got down to, they just basically said it wouldn't be appropriate.
Wouldn't be appropriate, yeah.
Wouldn't be appropriate to have those kind of events. And so, and the reason why is because those kind of events were religious in nature. But the pride, pagan pride, isn't religious in nature, according to the administrator of the library. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yes, no, it's not. Okay. So it's not a religious thing, really? Okay.
Paganism isn't a religious thing. Well, that's
obviously the administrator needs to go back and read a few of the books that they probably have in the library.
Undoubtedly,
yes. They would learn that they're completely wrong on that. Now, Diane and her folks had sent out email blasts, and they'd ask them to call the Cuyahoga County Library and let them know the display needs to be removed. Now, we've got an update before we went to air here. We got an update that Mrs. Stover got a message from the library. They called and left her a voicemail. Obviously, she was out doing something. And it said this, and she quotes it in her email. Basically says, quote, "We are going to change our practice. We realize that as the library, we were getting a little bit off message. And going forward, only library displays and programs will be allowed to be on display in our cases. So I want to thank you for your time in bringing this forward. I had a number of people call from your group." Unquote. So what the library administrator just said is, No mas.
Yes, no mas.
We're getting rid of it because we realized that we just basically stepped our foot into a bear trap. And they did, because honestly, just the fact that the administrator denied the question of the request of having a display up there for an event that's going on in Cleveland, which would be the pro-life conference, is viewpoint discrimination. It's illegal under the First Amendment to the Constitution. It's a violation of your basic constitutional rights. If you're going to display pagan pride event, you have to, and concomitantly gay right events, you have to display pro-life events. You have to display pro-Christian events like Christmas celebrations and cantatas and things that are going on in the local churches. Because if the public library is supposed to be a content-neutral, free speech zone, First Amendment place, then there is no place for them to deny if they're going to do the thing with pagan pride. And of course, obviously they're going to change it, but they had it up long enough that the pagan pride event was last weekend, obviously. So therefore, you know, they did it this time, but I think they're realizing they're under scrutiny now, so maybe they can't get away with it again. That's what it takes. I mean, and Diane just basically found out about it, went in, didn't create some big stink personally. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of, and they feel frustrated because they go in, they come in with righteous anger and they're upset and you need to do this, you need to do that. And the people are looking at them like, go away, you know, whatever. Diane was smart. You know, she was wise as a serpent and innocent as a dove. She didn't go in guns blazing, telling them how wrong they were and how evil it was to, you know, be celebrating something that's so anti-God and so anti, you know, with the values of the vast majority of the people in Cuyahoga County. No, she just asked us a couple of simple questions. Are you going to be consistent? Was really what she got down and asked. If you're going to open this venue for speech and display, are you going to be nonpartisan, non-biased, neutral, and open it up for other groups like ours? And of course, the immediate response she got back was, no, those aren't appropriate.
No, yeah, not appropriate.
Which means that the library was putting itself squarely in the crosshairs of a First Amendment lawsuit.
Oh, absolutely. And probably someone said, do you understand what you did?
They're probably like, you probably don't want to do that because you're going to get pounded. So, but anyhow, so that really, Chuck, I mean, that shows you at least in one sense what the power of one can do. Now there's another one. This was in Atlanta, Georgia area. So it's not fairly local, but it got some headlines when a local school district, when the superintendent of the local district decided, I think unilaterally, that the practice of having a morning assembly for the school and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance had to go. and they were going to replace it by the school writing up their own community pledge that made sure that they embraced globalism, that they embraced diversity, that they embraced inclusion and talk. See, you get it, Chuck. You know what this thing was going to look like.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that didn't set well with a number of the parents in the school district who started making some phone calls. They started asking some pointed questions. And it got to the point where the school board president said, I think that we've had some misinterpreting, because what had happened was that there was a state law in Georgia that was passed that basically said that they had to, you know, that they wanted children to be taught, you know, to love your country. And part of that is saying the Pledge of Allegiance to them. And so, you know, it's now a requirement in Georgia law that the schools need to start the day at some time, either in an assembly or in the homerooms, with reciting the pledge. Well, this administrator, obviously fairly liberal, I would take from the content of what they wanted to replace it with, decided they would interpret that to say that, well, no, we can't have it during a all-school assembly, so it has to go to the homerooms. And when the homerooms, then we need to, you know, like, shape it. Totally errant. Totally violation of the Georgia state law. But not really surprising, and really, really not surprising about the response of the parents, who were basically like, you've lost your mind. There is no way that that's going to happen. This needs to be fixed. Well, guess what, Chuck? That school is now reciting the Pledge of Allegiance again.
Yeah, not Chuck.
at all school gatherings in the morning. So they bring all the classes. These are younger kids. This isn't a high school. This is like younger kids. So they bring all the classes together, and they have their morning assembly, and they say the Pledge of Allegiance now. And it's only because of a handful of parents decided that, you know what, this nonsense has got to stop, and it's got to stop here.
Yep.
You know, we got to have some sense to anything.
And since that is the theme for today, that also wraps up today because we are out of time.
Of course. Well, this nonsense stops right now.
That's right. So, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.